Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And today we want to be talking about some developments of a sort of tragic, but of course, a type of moment that comes. The Kenneth Kaunda, one of the fathers of African liberation, has died in his homeland of Zambia, 97 years old. And if there's a proverb to describe him, I think it would be, "This old anvil laughs at many broken hammers." He was one of the great fighters. He did it in a mostly peaceful way. His manner, his character was so powerful. It influenced so many people. I would urge listeners, put in the name Martin Luther King and Kenneth Kaunda, and you'll see some beautiful photographs. And you can tell that Martin Luther King was very happy and very proud to be sitting alongside Kenneth Kaunda. The country he came from was once called Rhodesia, and he was the leader of the Rhodesian African Congress. So we have a lot to talk about because I want to link that to the return of Mr. Gbagbo to Ivory Coast, which I see as one of the reasons that the old anvil would laugh at the broken hammers, because they went after Kenneth Kaunda. They went after him very heavy, but he outlived most of the people who tried to get him. And what he stood for in Africa is returning to Africa. So I think it's a great thing. We'll be talking about him, and we'll bring in Winston Churchill too. And later in the show, we'll also talk about, of course, Mr. Biden meets Mr. Putin. And I guess we'll talk about the press conferences, because of course, nothing really happened at the meeting that anybody can make out. For Canadians, this is very important because Biden is our president, makes all the major decisions for us. So it's very important. But I think we might have learned a lot from the press conferences, and we'll get to that later in the show. We have a song sung by the man himself, Kenneth Kaunda. Basically, in the English translation is, "Let's all pull together." And Kenneth Kaunda used to carry, when he was a young man, he carried a guitar on his back as a school teacher, and he would stop and sing. He loved to sing with people. And this is his song, and they're taking 21 days of mourning for him. So we're going to hear Kenneth Kaunda's song, "Let's All Pull Together." Welcome back, Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. Hey, by the way, it's still June, and you can continue to donate to CIUT.FM. Mention Theater Report if you would. And throughout June, the remaining days of June, and of course, you would have a chance to win some of the great prizes. Go to CIUT.FM and have a look at the whole story. I mentioned at the top that we've lost a great man, a great figure in Africa. You could call him one of the liberators of Africa, Kenneth Kaunda. And he had impact around the world, really around the world. He was an anti-imperialist, an anti-colonialist, and as he said, anti-neocolonialism, anti-Zionism. He wanted to see a world of equal countries treated, you know, as a world of equality in which nations stood with mutual respect and as equals with one another. Kenneth Kaunda, and they are having 21 days of mourning in Zambia. He was born April 28, 1924. He died June 17, 2021. he was the leader of Zambia from 1964 until 1991. And I want to bring in another big personality from history to, in my mind, underlines the importance of Kenneth Kaunda, and that is Winston Churchill, because the Globe and Mail provided a moment in time on June 18, day after his death, after the death of Kenneth Kaunda, and as Churchill delivers finest hour speech. And here's the quote: "Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour." And it truly inspires people. And Churchill was a war leader, blah, blah. And, you know, it's very important to remember that Churchill's vision did not include Kenneth Kaunda. And none of the African leaders actually who struggled for independence and self-determination and the vote. Churchill famously said he didn't intend to preside over the dissolution of the empire, but he did. Take our hat off to him, him with his cigar and showmanship. This great figure, Kenneth Kaunda, shows how much we lost because of colonialism and neocolonialism, attempt to crush him and others. He went to prison, and of course there were many martyrs before Rhodesia came to an end. And the British tried to manage the whole thing from beginning to end. And this is a problem with colonialism, you have to remember. Colonialists hang around, they say, okay, you're right, and then they hang around. And reminding us again of Tolstoy's comment that the rulers will do anything for you except get off your back. Kenneth Kaunda was a mainstay of the struggle of the African National Congress and other guerrilla movements. And remember, the African National Congress, South Africa, was a guerrilla struggle. Nelson Mandela went to prison because of that, because of the charge that he was using. He had the temerity to use weapons against apartheid South Africa. And again, people should remember, you know, this word terrorist is used a lot, and it is misused as often as it is used correctly. They had won through a primarily parliamentary democratic means the power in Zambia, what became Zambia, Northern Rhodesia became Zambia. And Kenneth Kaunda remained in solidarity with brothers and sisters. He, together with his wife, who is known in Zambia as Mama Betty. The South Africans attacked Zambia on several occasions. They sent squads in to try to assassinate the African National Congress leaders. Many Zambians gave their lives, and ensuring the struggle would be a victory. And I don't think we can underline enough that, you know, in Africa, they're flying flags at half-mast. Tanzania has declared 10 days of mourning. Namibia, South Africa, all in respect of Kenneth Kaunda. We should do the same, actually. There should be complete respect for his memory. There won't be, because actually, this is a very important part of this, the memory, in my opinion, things to know about him. He wanted to develop Zambia for the Zambians, and he wanted to resist and did resist the white colonial settler rule in Africa, and he took on a heavy job. And of course, as the imperialist powers control the ports, and country can't breathe without ports. It can't get goods in and out, and copper was the main product of Zambia. So they put the closure on them. So the way they're doing Syria today, the way they try to do with the Islamic Republic of Iran. They were doing this to Zambia to make Zambia obedient. And Kenneth Kaunda called on the People's Republic of China, and this was in the 1970s, and they cooperated in the building of a railroad from Zambia to Dar es Salaam, a 1,160-mile long railway. The U.S. didn't build them a railroad. Canada didn't build them a railroad. And if they asked, they would have said, no, you can't have it because you're supporting the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. You're supporting the terrorist, Nelson Mandela. That's what they would have said. And indeed, I'll bet they did say it. But the People's Republic of China, together with the government of Zambia, built that railroad, and copper was able to pass through the port of Dar es Salaam, which brings us to another general, Julius Nyerere. All these leaders, by the way, were later condemned in the West as failures. They were all failures. Enlightenment didn't come until the George Bush and the new economic order and the diktat. Then, of course, anybody that they supported was a genius. And people like Kenneth Kaunda were pushed aside. Kenneth Kaunda was forced out of office in 1991. I say forced in that he was cut off, basically. The Soviets had went down in 1989, kaput, and became collaborators. I don't know if people know, Boris Yeltsin went to Miami, Florida, and met with the Contra leaders and with the Batista supporters in Miami and told them how much he agreed with them. That's how low the water had dropped. You think, I would say to Californians, you think Lake Mead is low? That's how far it had gone. Kenneth Kaunda was a principled man, a sweet man, a man of wonderful temperament. He said, okay, he stepped aside. And then they weren't satisfied. They tried to kill him. There was an attempted assassination. This is after he left office. And the West didn't complain about that. There was an attempt on his life. His son, who was 47 years old, was assassinated. He was a colonel in the Zambian army, and he was murdered. Then they accused Kenneth Kaunda of being involved in a coup. Nobody ever showed that he was involved. And he, by the way, in this period, he said, you know, I stepped aside, but now that you're slandering me, and lying and also misleading this country into the arms of the IMF, World Bank, and imprisoning the people of Zambia doing that, I'm going to run for office. So you know what they did? They banned him. I don't remember Canada complaining that one of the founding liberators of Africa was banned from running for office. They wouldn't let him run. And that, I assume that's because they thought they could defeat him if he did run. Oh no, they were afraid of him. So Kenneth Kaunda went through all that humiliation, one other step of humiliation. They decided not they wouldn't let him run, etc. But then they tried to kill him. I did kill his son. Then they said he wasn't a citizen because his parents had been born in Malawi. And so they took his citizenship. They also briefly had him in jail. But you know, there's only so much you can do to real people of substantial figure like Kenneth Kaunda, because anyone who ever looked at him and listened to him knew he's a deeply sincere, peaceful person. And he was a man of tremendous principles. And it turned the stomach of the people of Zambia to watch this. But there's been a shift now because the great project initiated by Bush Sr., followed ever since by Bush Jr., Clinton, Obama, now Biden. The diktat to Africa and to others and saying there's a one world order and there's one leader in the world and it's them. And anything you want to do, you have to go to Washington. That actually is no longer true. And I remind you of the country that built a 1,160 mile railroad from the copper country of Zambia to the port of Dar es Salaam. That country, China, is around. And there is more, we're seeing signs of a revival, a return of the struggle as it was originally designed by Mandela and Robert Mugabe, Sam Nujoma, of Namibia, who happens to be a personal favorite. I have to say, by the way, I was an investigator for Ramsey Clark and Dave Jacobs and T. Van Dixon and many others in Arusha, Tanzania. And I got to know and watch a lot of African coming and going. I read only African press while I was there. And I also, through the clients, came to know some things. The first client I worked for, Rutaganda George, who was an MRND leader in Rwanda, found himself and his family as refugees. And there were thousands of Rwandan refugees who ended up in terrible conditions in Zambia. And George told me that he got in difficulties, political difficulties, that led to his arrest, primarily, he believed, because he knew that the Rwandan refugees needed help, and he wanted to find people who could help him as a political leader. And he was a natural leader. He was quite a genuine individual who many people were drawn to, because he was a very conscientious Seventh-day Adventist and a good man. But at any rate, so he said, I think I should try to meet Kenneth Kaunda. And Kenneth Kaunda said, you're welcome. He was no longer in office, but he knew of the tragedy that had occurred, and he knew there were refugees who were in a terrible circumstances. So he met with Rutaganda and encouraged him and told him the things that he thought he could do to provide medicine, food, jobs, chance to breathe free in Zambia. I liked hearing the story of what kind of person he was, but those are very difficult times in that part of Africa. And that was at the time when the attempt was made on the life of Kenneth Kaunda tying this in, Mr. Gbagbo has returned to Ivory Coast. And this is a horrible story and should be a lesson in what neocolonialism is. You cannot, people should not use the word unless they're going to think about this. This, what happened to Gbagbo is just a disgrace. It involved the United Nations and involved a stupid, vicious neocolonial idea of responsibility to protect. Because Gbagbo was in an election in Ivory Coast. There were observers there, international observers. And it was a close contest. But Gbagbo was a very popular leader. So, okay, it's a close contest. The other side, this is common, is it not? Mr. Trump, Mr. Hillary Clinton say, oh, I won. And they, so, okay. And you always end up in court. So it went through the courts of Ivory Coast, full stop. The Supreme Court of the Ivory Coast took due notice of all the available information, acting as the Supreme Court of a country that is a sovereign country, said that Laurent Gbagbo had won. Well, that didn't satisfy the Secretary General of the United Nations, whose name I happily forget. Freud says you forget things you find unpleasant. At any rate, he, together with the great powers, the white superpowers, said, well, we got to do something. And they intervened in the domestic affairs of Ivory Coast, including to going to the point where Ukrainian and Russian nationals, mercenaries, flying UN helicopters, assaulted the capital, the home of the president, sitting president, Laurent Gbagbo, and arrested him and his wife by force, with the assistance primarily of a famous country, not African, famous country, France. They all connived at destroying basically the government of Cote d'Ivoire. And they were all proud of it, like a bunch of snakes. And I remember his name now, Ban Ki-moon. I hope I got it right. He said, oh, you know, this should never have happened. He should never have put us in the position of having to apprehend him. Well, you didn't have any right to apprehend him. But neocolonialism is real. It isn't just a little phrase. It is very real. What is happening in Syria right now with the Western-backed terrorists trying to destroy the Syrian government and the economy of Syria, willing to burn every last building in order to have hegemony. That is neocolonialism, something that we were warned about by Kenneth Kaunda, who talked about this. But just to show you how bad it got, they took Mr. Gbagbo out of Ivory Coast. They took him to The Hague, where they held him for 9 years. He won a disputed election. They held him for 9 years to try him for, I guess they decided it was going to be, genocide's the only word anybody knows anymore, so they got to be, had to be genocide or something. After all that, he was acquitted. I don't even know if they went to trial. It was a joke. But then, because they're imperialists, they didn't return him. He wasn't returned to Ivory Coast. They said, oh, well, no, he can't go back. We have to hold him a little while longer. Hold him, why? Who are you? So frankly, the devil in the soup here is imperialism. People say, oh, let's have a criminal court. Let's do this. Let's have some justice. If you're going to involve Paris and London and Washington, you can forget justice. Forget it. it's the, you're talking about the justice that came out of the mouth of Winston Churchill, who said to the Americans after World War II, we have to have an Anglo-American empire. He said it in public. The speech everybody loves, the one he gave in Missouri. Oh, you know, the wonderful Missouri, the Iron Curtain speech. Yeah, well, on his side of the Iron Curtain, he said they had, it had to be an Anglo-American empire. Does Five Eyes ring a bell? That's what that gang is. They've never declared that, okay, we're following him, you know, we're going to do what he wanted. No, but that is what they're doing. In the case of Gbagbo, he has returned. They better keep him safe, because he is, he's like Kenneth Kaunda, except he has the capacity to return as leader of his country. In the case of Kenya, the leadership is now the son of Jomo Kenyatta. I take my hat off to Jomo Kenyatta and his son, because they tried to, the International Criminal Court wanted to try his son. Why? Well, because they wanted to see if they could scramble, mess up, divide and conquer. You heard the expression? It's not a, it's a kid's expression, but it happens to be one of the smartest things anybody ever said. If you want to control people, divide and conquer. Incidentally, one of the sins of Gbagbo was that he, like many people who lead country, new countries, had a, they had an idea of a national union, unity party, and they were, and they had their goals. So within those goals, everybody was on the same side. It was, they were all together to fight for those goals. But the sacred home of multi-partism in the United States, which has two parties, which makes him superior to people who have one party, because they've got two parties. You're supposed to emulate them. And if you don't emulate them, then you're not, well, you're not a Democrat. But I tell you, Kenneth Kaunda was more of a Democrat than anybody in either Republican or Democratic Party of the United States. And that includes Bernie Sanders, who tags along. He's a, like on a kite. He's one of the things that keeps it steady. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, they and Hamilton and gang, they said they were going to have a one-party system. But they hated each other so much, they ended up with two. And but that, of course, being white slave owners, they knew how to do it. So you have to have two parties, slave party and the non-slave party. And meanwhile, slavery goes on. Kenneth Kaunda, profound man, in my opinion. And I'm so glad we talked about him and remember that he, this thing, he was the son of a Presbyterian minister. His father, he said, would be in the Presbyterian church with the white ministers, and they would sit on proper chairs and he sat on a bench. They had to make sure they didn't, you know, get the wrong idea about Christianity. So that Kenneth grew up to be part of that broad struggle. And I love the fact that he sang his whole life through. I'm glad we played his song. We have to all pull together. He wrote a book. I would urge everybody to find the book, Zambia Shall Be Free. And they sort of mock him. They say, well, you know, he said it, that when he came into office, he was a humanist. For people who are interested in history, I'll remind you, Fidel Castro, when he was first in office, they said, what are you? He said, I'm a humanist. And people said, I wonder what that is. Well, anyhow, we found out. Again, we're talking Kenneth Kaunda. And we're going to honor him in like the way all up and down Africa he's being honored. We want to talk about him more in the future. I think he opens a window, a little door to remind everybody about the struggle of, against colonialism. And who were the friends of that struggle? Well, the country that built the 1,160-mile railroad from Dar es Salaam to the copper mines of Zambia were the friends of Africa. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. I wanted to mention, of course, we want to say something about the election, or not the election, the meeting of Biden and Putin. It's declared a success because, as George Galloway said, Biden didn't bump into the furniture and nobody lost their trousers during a meeting, and so everything's cool. Very striking to me, the cultural side of it. U.S. continually tells the world that they're the only people who know anything about freedom, and they have the only free press. Well, Biden had a press conference where only American and friendly Brits, I guess, were invited. No Russian journalists were invited. And I watched him, and if you haven't heard about it, at the end of it or just prior, I don't know when this happened, but he was going from one point to the other, and a CNN reporter said, "Oh, do you think you can trust Putin? You know, did you say you trust him?" And in America, this is a big subject. Nobody ever asks if they can be trusted. It's always about the Russians and other people. But Biden then turned, wagging his finger, raising his voice, walked over and wagged his finger at the, and basically what he said to the reporter was, "Get off my lawn." It was absurd. It was about, you know, you have to listen closely to what I say and get it right. And then, of course, 5 minutes later, his handlers had him on the ground and yelled in his face, and he came back and said, "I'm sorry I said that." But let's move over. Putin had a press conference, and Putin's press conference went for about 90 minutes. And guess who was there? The American press were invited, and they behaved like Americans. They said, "Oh, you're still killing people. Are you going to do the, are you sneaking up on us? Are you going to try to break our internet?" A bunch of basically crap. And he answered them. But that was a great contrast. You saw a leader standing comfortably and didn't lose his temper and didn't wag his finger. 90 minutes. Now, but look at it. The Russians were not invited to Biden's press conference because he can't take the heat. Americans brought the heat to Putin. He handled it. He seemed to welcome it. And if you want to compare systems and you think you're the big boys on the block, you better think twice. And remember, Canada, Biden is your president. So you might want to get your 2 cents in. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. See you next week.